Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We have a special lined up today. Nothing on health today, a lot on health coming up tomorrow and the next day. Classrooms on the air in depth. Instead, my office has been inundated with questions about COVID. A lot of those deal with what should I do? Should I get the vaccine or not? I can't tell people that. I've stated repeatedly that I will support you in either direction, but in a lot of cases, people say, well, if I don't get the vaccine immediately, I lose my job. I have no other job. I don't have savings. The circumstances of my life are preventing me from possibly moving to another place. So I'm going to take a journey today to share with you and with other individuals, experts in their field, top of their field, most academically qualified, clinically experienced people I can find, all pro-vaccine, all orthodox medicine, having nothing to do with alternatives. And I want you to hear their truth. You can agree or disagree with them. If you disagree, challenge them. You can write to them and you can say, I disagree with this, this, and this. All of the notes for everything I'm sharing, all the peer-reviewed journal articles, all of the information is posted on GaryNall.com, so you have a lot of information you can follow up on. I'll also continue what I started yesterday, but unfortunately I didn't have time to complete my thoughts yesterday. It was at the end of the program, and the clock was ticking, and it will take some time, so I thought, well, what better thing? And I told Richard, I'm going to do a more in-depth, because I did not put it in the proper context of what I wanted to say so people can really understand from my perspective my biggest concern. For the last 3 months, we've been seeing this push to have children vaccinated. In fact, all the editorials, all the comments are vaccinate the children. Now, Anthony Fauci is saying a mask inside. But there's a great contradiction there, where schools are told if you're playing sports, even soccer for children, they must wear the masks. Otherwise, they put people at risk. And is that true or not? We're going to show you two clips that demonstrably show they are wrong. But what you do is up to you. A lot of this has to do with propaganda. How do I know? Well, we managed to find the study from Yale University where before the vaccines, a half a year before the vaccines, they were already planning a propaganda campaign. The talking points, how to justify. It was all based upon fear. I'll read from that. Also today, we have to take a look at the larger underlying issue, and that is, why is it that at this moment in time, the everything is about shaming people? And yet, did you know, and you'll find out today, that the Democrats have taken Medicare off the table. And it's a shame, yes it is, because think of all the people who are sick and need help, and yet they can't be helped. Yet if you have a vaccine and you get injured, who's supposed to help you? Everyone's been identified. No one's going to come up and say, okay, we made a mistake, and they're not acknowledging their mistakes. Hence, in context, I said that you're being lied to by many, but also even those who are not lying are giving misinformation, meaning they're taking something they believe and they're passing it forward. A lot of doctors, nurses in the hospitals, pharmacists are saying it's safe and effective, 95% effective. Based on what studies? The studies on the vaccines are not complete yet. They won't be complete for at least 3 years before we have all the data in where we can make intelligent, reasoned, and real science notes on it. Right now, it's just conjecture. And how honest are the figures about how many people have been injured or died from the vaccine? Remember, at the bottom of everything is trust. So if the average person trusts the government or the media in the process of whatever the government is offering, you can trust. Get your vaccine. It's important. Trust. Don't listen to those other people. They're deplorables, all of them. They must all be Trumpites. Really? What proof do you have of that? So we're going to go through myth by myth and show you where you've been misinformed, out and out lied to, and then you'll have an opportunity to share your points of view. But I'm going to start today with sharing just some figures. Now, think about these figures. My whole emphasis is trying to get the insanity, and it's absolute insanity. There is no science backing up the mass vaccination of all young people and kids, even down to 6 months of old. If you have a six-year-old child, they don't even have a developed immune system. So you're going to give them something that will trigger an immune response nonstop 24/7 to a six-month-old baby? That is a crime against humanity. And all the people in the media and all the special interest groups and all the ideologues who support this without protesting, then that's on you. Because this day will come in the future where we see another thalidomide. It is inevitable. You have, under the age of 15, 61 million Americans. And that's who they want to vaccinate, under 12. You have, from 15 to 20 years of age, you have 25 million. 21 to 44, you have 103 million. 45 to 64, 82 million. And 65 over, 53 million, for a total population of 324.3 million. Those are the latest figures that we have. So let's just say that, look at all of the science, the peer review science. Which group is most at risk for COVID and death? And then which is least? Well, the least at risk are all of the people who are under 44. So there you're looking at approximately about 190 million Americans. 190 million Americans, over half the American population, are not at risk at all. In fact, the younger you get, the less at risk you are. And still, those are ones mandating masks, can't go to school, got to get the vaccines, two vaccines, possibly boosters. And many of these people, especially those who are under six, don't have a fully developed immune system. So this is where we're going with an experiment in genetic engineering with no good science conclusions to back it up. So remember those figures. And also today we're going to hear a clip from a senator, Nino Vitale. We're going to hear the masks that do not work and putting children at risk. Now, isn't it interesting? On Sunday, they had all these football games. There were no masks. And they're young and healthy. Well, with all those playing and all those games, you would think that there'd be a mass contamination. And then when you look at basketball players, they're rubbing each other, their bodies, when they're playing hard. And so they're definitely sharing in their fluids, their sweat. They're out there and they're right beside each other. So if this were really the pandemic, they would all be contaminated. But then again, think of it this way, and we have school teachers in this audience. How many times in the winter or late fall have you had flu going around the school, and you have, let's say, in a classroom of 30 kids, you have three that end up with the flu, one with pneumonia, others with colds, but almost in all cases, they recover. Everyone in that school was contaminated. Everyone in that classroom, because they weren't wearing masks historically, they were in a class. It's just those who had the strongest immune systems, those who practiced the best hygiene, were the ones least likely to be infected, but everyone was exposed. But exposure does not mean infection. So you can't have a flu, you can't have a virus in a room and it only selectively infects certain people. It infects, or it you get exposed, everyone gets exposed. But we all don't get sick. And yet they've tried to make it believe that if one person in a crowd gets infected, everybody is going to be equally infected. Well, what would happen if you had all of the athletes, basketball players, football players, all have to wear a mask? You'd have people dying on the athletic fields. How do I know that? We're going to go to two videos right now. Watch them. These are real videos using state-of-the-art equipment that governmental agencies use to monitor two different things. A, the amount of oxygen that your body needs, so you don't suffer from oxygen deprivation, in which case you end up with brain damage, neurological damage that is permanent. And the other is the carbon dioxide you're breathing out, a lot of it stays in there and it gets to a high level. Mind you, in both cases, it was within 15 seconds. 15 seconds oxygen deprivation, 15 seconds carbon dioxide. They're two separate studies done by two different groups of people. But I want you to see this for yourself, because no one in the mainstream media will play this for you to show you some of the challenges, legitimate challenges, to the prevailing dogma. Let's go now to Del Bigtree with his son, and they're trying on all these different masks. And when you hear the alarm, that alarm is in the device itself when you end up with an excessive amount of carbon dioxide, which can cause brain damage.
This is my son, Ever. Ever's 11 years old, and here in Texas, the mandate right now is that 10 and over have got to wear a mask. Ever has to wear a mask wherever we go, and so we bought this thing this week. This measures the amount of CO2 that's in the air. Can we just look at the ocean numbers? Carbon dioxide levels and potential health problems are indicated below. From 250 to 350 is the background normal outdoor level, 350 to 1,000 ppm, typical level found in occupied spaces with good air exchange, 1,000 to 2,000 level associated with complaints of drowsiness and poor air. Obviously, I don't want Ever to have drowsiness or poor air. 2,000 to 5,000 level associated with headaches, sleepiness, and stagnant, stale, stuffy air, poor concentration, loss of attention, increased heart rate, and slight nausea may also be present. And then 5,000 ppm or more. This indicates unusual air conditions where high levels of the other gases also could be present. Toxicity or oxygen deprivation could occur, meaning do not hit 5,000. All right, here we go. Right now we're at 848. So I'm going to go ahead and just insert this right like as he did, right underneath, and try and keep it. That feels pretty tight right there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can, you know, just breathe naturally. Let's just see what happens. Okay. All right, so we're at 1,367. We've already just passed two. So now we're in the place where he can be having headaches. He can be, we're at 3,786. Look at this, we've just passed 5,000. Now we're in the toxic level, right? Now we can be doing this, 7,000 inside this mask of the CO2, 8,000 parts per million. And now this thing's gone off the Richter scale, folks. It can't even register how high the CO2 levels are inside. And look how many seconds that was. All right.
Can I just?
Yeah, you want to take that off? Just in case you're thinking to yourself, well, that was a really good mask, that was an N95 mask. Just before the show, we tested a couple of different things that you may be putting on your baby. Take a look at this.
Deep calm breathing. Now you get the idea, right? You notice.
All right, let's try this one. Plastic face shield.
Yeah, just breathe, Ever. I mean, obviously, it looks like there's air all over, but even this, you can tell the CO2 gas is getting caught in by his face. Clearly not as much as wearing a mask, but aren't you shocked that this is even having an effect at all? We're up to 1,500. We're nearing 2,000 even with this. Let's see if it's still going up. Still going up. As it collects inside of this mask. I've seen videos of children in Asia wearing these masks in school, sometimes this and a mask. Imagine what that does to you. So we've hit 2,000, which is now we know is not safe for any school or any workplace environment. 4,000. Now we're going over 5,000. Now we're into what's known to be a danger zone, 6,000. Parts per million, CO2, 6,600. This is a cloth mask. I thought when I was wearing a cloth mask that this was actually safer. So up in the 9,000s with both of these masks, upper 8,000s. Unbelievable.
At the center of all of this is children, right? I think that's the biggest discussion. Do our children really need to wear this coming into school? I see babies in strollers wearing masks. How safe is that if they're at 10,000 parts per million of CO2? Are you adhering to laws from your government that are hurting the development of your child's brain?
Now, let's go to a completely separate study. That was on carbon dioxide. And mind you, those were within 15 seconds, and it was toxic, off the charts. And it couldn't go higher than 10,000 measurement, and 5,000 was the cutoff. And that's what a kid is wearing all day long, or adults wearing. Now let's go to the amount of oxygen deprivation, which is equally bad. And then remember, with a mask, you're getting both oxygen deprivation and carbon dioxide toxicity. Now to the second example.
Hi, this is State Representative Nino Vitale. We're here today to talk about oxygen deprivation and mask usage. We're out here in the middle of a field in Champaign County. It's a beautiful 70 degrees this evening. We're next to 100-acre woods. And what we have here is an instant oxygen sensor. This senses different types of gases, and if it senses anything above or below the normal level, this GX2009 made by RKI, you can look up this unit, will beep and it will tell us if there's a problem. Now, as you can see, 19.5% is what OSHA recommends as safe. Anything below that is considered unsafe. This unit will beep if the oxygen level drops below that. Right now you can see it's at 20.9, so it's above safe levels. And we're going to bring in our first student because, of course, the public health experts are recommending that our students wear masks. So we're going to take the GX2009. We're going to put it up inside the mask and just have our student breathe normally here and see if it starts to. Okay, you can see that this started to beep right away. Let me see if I can show the percentage here. 17.1 is what it shows. Let me see if I can get that peak. Okay, there it is. It actually was lower than that at 17.0. So again, 19.5, and you can see how quickly that was. Thank you. We're going to bring in student number two. Let me clear the peak on this because this does have a memory. So I'm just going to hold the air button here and clear that. Okay, so now you can see our peak is back to 20.9, and we're going to bring in our second student with the N95 mask. This is the 3M N95 mask. A little harder to get this in because this one's a little smaller mask, but do your best to put this up underneath your mask near where you breathe there, and we'll see what happens. Again, okay, there we go. Almost immediately from breathing, it's sensing. Okay, thank you. Now let me get to the peak screen where it has the memory on it. Okay, there's the peak of 18.1. So almost immediately, this is dropping below what is considered safe by OSHA. And now we're going to bring in our third mask, our third student with a different type of mask. This is just your standard surgical mask. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to clear this because I want to make sure everybody knows. So the peak now is 20.9. We're back clear. Let me get back to the reading screen. Okay, now it's in active reading mode at 20.9 as well. And then if you would do the same thing, we're going to have student number three here just put it up under his mask and just try to put the mask back as best. Okay. Thank you. All right, and it was showing in the 17s here. I'm going to try to turn the alarm off, go to the peak screen. Okay, that one, 17.6. So as you can see, The 19.5 is what OSHA considers the danger level. And on all three of the tests, we did a straight surgical mask, we did an N95 mask, and we did a very thin mask of the first student. Can you hand me that? I just want to show how thin that mask is. Yeah, the gray one there. That's great. I mean, this was the first one. This is very thin material, and it's still trapping and lowering the oxygen level. Again, GX2009, made by RKI Industries. Anybody can do this test. Almost instantly, the oxygen levels drop below the danger zone.
There you have two experiments. You could do this for yourself. You can look at the peer review literature, and you'll find this. This is aside from the idea that the COVID virus is so small, it can get through any mask. But then what happens to the person's mental health, brain health, neurological health, when they're deprived of oxygen over a period of time, and they also are exposed to carbon dioxide at the same time, a double negative? Do you see that discussed anywhere? No. Especially in children? No. Yet you want to advocate all of these protocols, and everyone is in exact conformity in the media and in the government about this. And yet all of this should be legitimately challenged with open debate, bringing in the literature and the demonstrations like this. It's not happening. Something else is not happening. A lot of people, not everyone, trust the government, and hence they trust the vaccines. And right now, the rhetoric coming from the executive branch is so demeaning, it is so pejorative in the terms being used, that if you don't get the vaccine, it doesn't matter why, then you're a bad person. You're no better than a domestic terrorist. You represent a threat to everyone. All right? How many children have been diagnosed with some form of learning disability or neurological problems, including autism, from all the vaccines over the last, let's say, 30 years? And then add in their parents. We are over 10 million. Now, do you think that those people were treated well? No. They were denied that the vaccine caused this. I've interviewed over 1,000 of them. I've done 4 award-winning films on this: Autism Made in USA, Deadly Deception, Silent Epidemic, and Vaccine Nation. I brought together over 500 vaccine-injured families in Chicago to film them. One woman, a pediatrician herself, gave her son the vaccine, and he regressed into autism. But nobody would acknowledge this. Mind you, she's a board-certified pediatrician, and she had to live with that. That she didn't do her homework. She trusted what her medical societies and others were saying. And now she says her son has diarrhea about 7 hours a day, and she can't take him out anywhere in public because he screams inconsolably, and then people look at her and call the police thinking somehow she's abusing her child. Now that's going to be for the rest of his life. And yet, completely unacknowledged. Do you think that she should have a legitimate reason to question getting this particular vaccine when she does now do her homework and she realizes the scientific literature shows that her child has natural protection and therefore it shouldn't be put at risk again? And will the government or the doctor, the nurse or the pharmacist acknowledge when there is a adverse effect? No, they are not. This evening at 7 o'clock, I'm going to be interviewing one of the leading experts in statistical analysis in the world, Dr. Jessica Rose, along with Stephen Kirsch and Matthew Crawford, impeccable backgrounds in science. They've written a paper. I'm going to quote one paragraph, and this paper is entitled Estimating the Number of COVID Vaccine Deaths in America. Mind you, they're only using the best case example of how statistics should be compared, and they've been in conformity with other leading epidemiologists and people in the field, and they all say the same thing. Everybody agrees that the FDA and the CDC's vaccine adverse event reporting system is grossly underreporting deaths and injuries. Here is what they have to say. I'm quoting verbatim, and this is posted. Quote, using this URF for all Varus. And one second here, let me just get this down. Using the URF for all Varus classified SEEs, estimates to date are as follows. Listen carefully, everyone. This is just in America. 205,809 dead. 818,462 hospitalizations. 1,830,809 emergency room visits. 230,113 life-threatening events. 212,691 disabilities. And 7,998 birth defects to date, end quote. Okay, let's just say that they are close to being right, if not completely right, and we will not know for some time because the government has been obfuscating on this. But when you have dead, it doesn't get worse, but then you have to look at life-threatening. Now, life-threatening, many of these people are in life-threatening situations will die, and some will commit suicide rather than lay the rest of their life, even if they're young, in a hospital bed. Then you have to look at the disabled. And I've shown pictures of the disabled and videos, young men, young women, who've had their legs amputated because of the side effects of what this does. So if you just add those numbers up, it's 648,613. Now look at the other numbers here. And these other numbers are staggering when it comes to the disabilities. And these are not being reported. If you have 1,830,000 people visit an emergency room, and after they've been vaccinated, but the nurses, as you've heard and seen them on this program, they'll say, well, it takes a half hour to fill out one of those vaccine adverse event reporting systems, and we just don't have the time, or some don't want to. So that's why it's been grossly underreported. You haven't heard these figures before. And they want everyone vaccinated, no exceptions. Okay, no exceptions. So you don't want to give anyone a chance not to be vaccinated because they may have a legitimate reason not to be vaccinated. Nope, everybody's got to be vaccinated. What if you already have the virus? What if you're naturally immunized? The New York Times today had started off a feature story about, well, you know, the so-called natural immunity. It was comparing natural immunity to vaccines and said, yes, you must get vaccinated. Where's the science supporting that? And why are you saying it's supposed natural immunity? There's no supposed. There are 20 peer-reviewed articles showing natural immunity is better than vaccinated immunity. That's why about arguing pro or con vaccines. This is about saying good science versus not good science. And that's where we're at this moment. Now I want to, so the government has not been telling the truth. The government has been lying about the damage done by the vaccines, and the media has been complicit because with all this death and destruction, you would think that someone in the media would do an honest story, objective story, showing what has happened to people's lives, especially they didn't do it with Gardasil. We did. We were the first program in the United States to do a whole feature and several articles on the fraud of Gardasil and the lies perpetrated by the manufacturer about how this will protect you. When I spoke with the developer of the Gardasil vaccine, and it was a mathematical model. Everything they were saying about the Gardasil was lies. Now, so take it. I'm going to now share this with you and see if this makes a difference. Everything from big manufacturers and corporations that they're trying to sell us has to be advertised or promoted. But in the case of vaccines, many medications, it's propaganda. How do you do that? Lobbying. Pfizer lobbying hits decade high as dozens of high-profile political appointees become big pharma reps. This is from the National Pulse. Quote, Republicans and Democrats alike are now working for the big pharma lobby. Quote, amongst the COVID-19 pandemic and subsequent vaccine rollout, pharmaceutical giants, including Pfizer and Moderna, have substantially increased their lobbying efforts. A National Pulse investigation has revealed the lobbying of apparatuses at both vaccine-reliant companies in terms of the number of lobbyists hired and the overall budget deployed to influence government officials have seen dramatic increases since 2019. So what did one person say in an top scientist at Pfizer just 2 weeks ago when he was filmed without being aware of it? Quote, basically, our organization, meaning Pfizer, is run on a COVID money now, end quote. And then it goes through all of the people in Congress who have been hired in order to push the vaccines for these people. Joe Biden's former legislative affairs director, Sonifi Henry, director, he was the affairs director from his days as vice president, one of these hires. A former staffer for the Department of Health and Human Services, a person named Beck Era, and a top aide director of the White House Office of Public Engagement. And you go right down all of these congressional places, they're all being hired at very big salaries to be lobbyists. So how can we trust something if everybody's got some stake in it? And yet we do. Now, this is interesting, and we have someone coming on the program in 2 days to discuss this. Quote, frontline doctors claim 100 to 200 members of Congress treated with ivermectin. Quote, and this is Dr. Pierre Corey of Frontline Doctors recently tweeted this, quote, between 100 to 200 United States Congress members, plus many of their staffers and family members with COVID, were treated by a colleague over the past 15 months with ivermectin and the protocols. None have gone to the hospital, end quote. But did these people then advocate? No. For themselves, yes. And by the way, who is excluded, who doesn't have to take the vaccine? Members of Congress and their families. Oh, so they get a pass. That's correct. Quote, they have blocked my IP address. RNA vaccine inventor blocked from reading New England Journal of Medicine. This is by Chris Minahan. And he says, quote, Dr. Robert Malone, the inventor of the RNA vaccines, and RNA as a drug, has apparently been banned from reading the New England Journal of Medicine after they decided to manually block his IP address in a stunning petty act. Quote, this is fascinating. I'm apparently no longer allowed to read the New England Journal of Medicine, end quote. Dr. Malone said Thursday on Twitter, quote, they have blocked my internet protocol address, quote. Dr. Malone said he's aware of how to get around IP blocks, but, quote, what is fascinating is that the New England Journal of Medicine would even take the trouble to do this petty act, end quote. So the man who invented the very science that's used in all the vaccines, when he spoke out and said how it had been misused, suddenly he is attacked. He is not alone. Many others have been attacked as well. So they want to give everyone 16 years and older, they want to give them the vaccine. Okay, now originally up to December 11th, this was Pfizer's vaccine given under emergency use authorization. Pfizer did begin vaccine trials with adolescents 12 to 17 from December 14th, and this continued until July 16, 2021. On May 10th, the CDC approved to have the same vaccine extended to 12 to 15-year-olds. This was still under, at that time, the emergency authorization use. This is the same formulated vaccine as given to the 16-year-olds. Now, the CDC extended the age range before the trials were completed. Well, how's that science? That's not science. Meaning that much data had not been collected and collated and processed, and nor had they time to be reviewed by the CDC or the FDA. This is all about marketing. As the CDC's own August 6 report states, there have been 9,246 various reports of adverse effects in the 12 to 17-year-old group. Well, these are young, healthy people, 12 to 17 years old. And how many of those were for heart inflammation conditions that they normally would not have? So you put 9,246 young people's health at risk and no one reports on it? Yes, that includes death. So everybody starts the slow shuffle, and that's what happens. And now it gets even worse. And why? The current trial has enrolled only 2,268 kids. Two-thirds received the active vaccine, the rest the placebo. Here's what you're not being told. Here's what I will tell you. And I have the data, their own data, to prove it. Just like with the adult version of this, who did they exclude? Who wasn't allowed in the trials, the 95% effective trials? People with cancer, heart disease, dementia, Alzheimer's, people with diabetes and morbidly obese. I see. Who was then told you must take the vaccine after the trials? People with cancer, heart disease, morbid obesity, dementia, Alzheimer's. I see. But why didn't you include them in the original trials? Would that have skewed your figures? Do you understand what I'm saying? How can you exclude unhealthy people because you don't want bad results and yet include those people by mandate after it becomes a profit-making venture? That is not science. That is terrible. All right? That is absolute fraud. So who did they exclude from these young kids? Oh, okay. Mind you, Pfizer's already testing the vaccine on children 2 to 5 years and another for those 6 months to 2 years. And they're going to expect the data in very shortly. It normally would take 4 to 6 years. They want it in a matter of months. So this is important. And mind you, when you give a child a vaccine that young, you're playing Russian roulette with their immune system. More people will die, according to the experts, from the COVID vaccine, these young kids, than will die of COVID. But nobody cares. So who did they exclude? Well, any kid that had a real problem. Cancer? Excluded. Well, how many children have leukemia? Lots. How about autoimmune condition? Millions. In fact, we have the sickest generation in American history as far as autoimmune conditions, arthritis, adult diabetes in children, and asthma, inner ear infections, etc. But you're excluding these people. Yes. I see. Okay. Just want to know, want more facts on this. So this is important. And by the way, the pro-vaccine messaging includes, quote, societal guilt, end quote, was being tested 6 months prior to the vaccine's approval. This is from Matt Agarist from the Freethought Project. Quote, according to Encyclopedia Britannica, propaganda is the more or less systematic effort to manipulate other people's beliefs, attitudes, or actions by means of symbols, words, gestures, banners, monuments, music, clothing, insignia, hairstyles, designs on coins and postage stamps, etc. Deliberateness and a relatively heavy emphasis upon manipulation distinguish propaganda from causal, casual conversation or the free and easy exchange of ideas. Those who have been paying attention to the last 19 months have seen the brazen propaganda pushed by media and government alike. And then it goes into the different organizations who are behind all this and who are working on getting people to feel guilt. And one of these is a group of so-called messaging experts at Yale University who are getting their message ready for when the COVID vaccine would roll out. Didn't know that? Now you do. Do your homework. I'm Gary Knoll. We're talking about the inaccuracies that are going on out there. And we're going to take a brief break and come back. So please stay with us. Back in a moment. By the way, yesterday near the end of the program, a caller raised a good question. Now, I like the questions that people or statements this audience brings forth, because it's all extemporaneous, none of it's screened. And I was answering a question, but unfortunately, and here's the unfortunate part, I did not have time to put this in proper context. And so some people were confused. I want to thank Linda, the program director for asking, would I clarify it so people were not confused by it? And I'm happy to do that because it's only in full context that people understand and hear what it is. I said that we're being lied to, true enough, and we have an expert who's going to show you how many lies we have, Dr. Yeadon, one of the world's most brilliant scientists, most respected scientists, who's just ripping through all the lies. But also a lot of people are simply misstating the science. Now, in point of fact, Pfizer's main vaccine was approved for adults, officially approved and licensed in August. And originally, and that's well known, I know that everyone in the field knows that. And originally that vaccine was given emergency use authorization in early December of last year, just before the massive rollout. And this was for people 16 years of age and older. Then last May, the CDC approved the same adult vaccine, but still for emergency use only, to 12 to 15-year-olds. And finally, the FDA officially approved and licensed this adult vaccine on August 23rd. Fine. However, and perhaps I did not make this clear. I know I didn't, because after the show, I said I'm going to correct that tomorrow or expand on it. I was specifically concerned about the vaccine to be administered to children under 12, because that's where all the energy, all the articles, that's where the big money is, because it's a huge, huge number. And because a lot of the controversy going on right now, as I speak, concerns Pfizer's application and request last Thursday to authorize the use of its vaccine for 5 to 11-year-olds, which has a different formulation than the vaccine now fully approved. And as I just mentioned, look at all the children that were excluded who have the diseases that now they're going to be told, get vaccinated, even if you have autism, no matter what you have, cancer, get the vaccine. They've done it for adults, they'll do it for children. Could you imagine the number of children whose lives are putting at risk? That's what's important. And you may recall in the news that two top FDA officials resigned over the matter, perhaps in protest of the pressure of the agency, but also because the agency was wrong. They did not want to approve the vaccines for children. But they were overruled, and also the person heading that in 2017 received funding from Pfizer. Well, that's a conflict of interest, and we have the actual audio clip of all the scientists wanting to give their statements, and everyone that challenged him, he just cut them off, wouldn't answer any of their questions. So it was an extraordinarily biased way that they came about this. So this is the issue right now. That's our issue. And is there any sound evidence to warrant the need for adolescents and children to be vaccinated against the SARS-2 virus? And this would have to be based upon whatever scientific evidence there is to confirm that the virus poses serious risk against children's health and even causing their death. And I would add, for the teenagers and adults under 40 in general, show me the science. Show me the studies that children or young people for young adults under 40 are at risk of dying. When you have 99.5 to 99.9% protection from death, then the vaccine could represent a greater threat. And especially now that we know the vaccine doesn't stay in the deltoid, they lied. It's throughout the whole body. When they said you can't shed, they're shedding. When they said you get the vaccine and you're protected from getting the virus, and the president just told us that this week, 2 days ago. And absolutely not true. In fact, I'm going to be asking Dr. Rose tonight, since Israel is the most vaccinated country, one of the two, China also is catching up, in the world, and their adults there, it's about 98.6%, I believe. And now, guess what? Two vaccines, and the number one group entering the hospital, up to 90 to 95%, were fully vaccinated people who didn't have COVID. Now they have COVID, they're in a hospital, and many are dying. So do they have an adverse event reporting system? Zero. But how can you put a whole country at risk and not have any way of calculating and tabulating the adverse effects of this? I guess they just didn't expect the negative side of this to come out, but it has. So she's on tonight and leading. She is a molecular biologist. She has a background also in a doctorate in immunology. She's published in many peer-reviewed journals. There's no controversy in her background. She's very, very scientific-oriented. And she was one of the people who did the analysis on the American Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System and showed that they absolutely are lying, and then how terrible the vaccine rollout has been in Israel. So just imagine what is going to happen when we have nothing that we could be preventing serious events if we got people, all Americans, on a prophylactic program, including any number of well-tolerated and relatively safe drugs. We could have nutrients that are completely safe and a healthy diet. We're doing none of the above. In spite of that, we've all been exposed to COVID variants, and therefore we have a very active immune system. They don't count any of that. So this isn't about science anymore. So yes, many have been infected. Probably the vast majority have been asymptomatic. And yet they're telling us, oh, asymptomatic people, you know, probably a third of all, you know, people infected were asymptomatic. That's nonsense. That's completely unscientific. The actual statistical significance of an asymptomatic person spreading is 0.7%. That's 0.7%. Where you're going to get infected are in hospitals, nursing home, hospice centers, or controlled clinical environments where people are sick and someone has the virus and is spreading in that contained environment. And they're wanting to believe that everybody is equally vulnerable everywhere. So I guess they're going to ask people to keep the mask on, social distancing, etc. So most young people have minor symptoms, some will have no symptoms. And even those that did die of COVID, and it's a small number, the majority of those were with comorbidities like leukemia, obesity, etc. But they don't want to go there. They don't want to have this discussion, this debate. A child turning out positive on a diagnostic test or the now confirmed risk of a serious vaccine reaction, they don't want to talk about. And this is why more and more medical professionals, even within our federal health system, oppose vaccinating the younger population. All the pro-vaccine people that I know are saying there's absolutely no need. This is a fraud. One even said this is a crime against humanity. Nevertheless, this is Pfizer vaccine for children under 12, has not been fully approved and licensed. That was the statement. Unfortunately, I understand how it could be conflated. And if that happened, I'm sorry that there was any confusion. But let's be clear that the vaccine I was referring to was the vaccine for children under 12, which has not been approved or licensed. The one above it, yes, but we all knew that. Below, people don't realize that. And so therefore, when they're told, we'll get the vaccine, people will go ahead and think, oh, this has been fully checked and it's perfect and go ahead and give it. And you're going to be testing it now on children 2 to 5 years of age, another group, even infants down to 6 months of age. What is deeply worrisome is that they're rushing the vaccine through the federal system at lightning pace and making every effort to leap over the usual regulatory and medical review hurdles to ascertain efficacy and safety with rigorous data, but rigorous data is not there. You can't have that kind of rigorous data in this short period of time. So Pfizer hopes to have its vaccines for 5-year-olds to 6-month infants ready for emergency use approval before the end of the year, and that's only a couple months away. We should all be concerned. That's where we're putting our energy, and so my comments were in that context. Richard Gale's on the phone now. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Gary.
Richard, I'd like for you to address some of the concerns that we have, including the listener who said yesterday, oh, but aren't all of the people entering hospital entering who were not vaccinated? That's another piece of propaganda they're putting out there. Tell us what the actual science shows on that.
Well, the actual science is only the sanitized science that is coming from the federal health agencies, and then of course is distributed to hospital administrators, clinic administrators, because those are the ones that set forth the policy of the medical staff. So, in terms of any statistics and scientific statistics that are accurate in any regard, it's just not there. I mean, it's simply not there. What we are hearing is from the medical personnel in the emergency rooms or in different wards and what they're coming forward and stating. So this is why we're witnessing a lot of medical personnel, nurses who are leaving their jobs because they're witnessing and seeing just the kind of fraud that's been perpetuated in their, you know, in their work environment. And so there's been all these leaks, and we're seeing that. This is kind of a battle between the official narrative and the firsthand accounts, the firsthand subjective accounts of people, you know, right there in the trenches looking at patients. So that's where that is stands right now. But I think with respect to the hospitalization, and I just make a point that, you know, right now we're in the midst of a terrible flu season is underway. And I've even heard that I had my daughter home just for the past 3 days with this terrible flu. A lot of the kids are out of her classes. But what we're hearing is that the CDC is claiming this enormous increase in children being associated with COVID infections. In fact, in one of the CDC's MMWR reports from last month, they're making a claim that 50 children or adolescents per 100,000 are now being hospitalized, although the claims are that this is supposedly the Delta variant. The CDC and the pediatric specialists, they have no evidence that it's a Delta variant causing any of these conditions. And the hospitals and clinics, of course, are not properly testing or even being advised to test for flu infections or any of these other respiratory viruses. There was one researcher at Texas Children's Hospital, and he stated on the record with NBC News that these are cases of co-infection with positive COVID tests, but with other respiratory viruses. Right now, there's also the RSV virus, which is starting in its seasonal track right now. So, and this goes back to also the failure of our diagnostic tests, the intrinsic problems of accurately testing for a live infection, because we all carry antibodies and perhaps dormant genetic fragments of viruses that could be wrongly diagnosed as the presence of SARS. So, I think that's the problem with the hospitalizations right now. The other big issue concerning children is this, the narrative that we're being given is that by the CDC is the transmissibility of people who are asymptomatic, and particularly amongst children, adolescents, or individuals from 30 years and younger. So, you know, the University of Toronto study, which is published by the Canadian Medical Association, they found that children and youth are at very, very low risk for any severe acute COVID during the early stages of pandemic. I think there were only two in a very large study looking through a lot of their healthcare system. There were only 264 kids that were hospitalized with COVID, but 43% were admitted for other reasons. And then the majority of the others were admitted for fever or vomiting or a serious cough. We're not even talking about whooping cough. You know, for some reason during the pandemic, some of these other infectious diseases such as whooping cough just seemed to have disappeared, or, you know, maybe they were hijacked by aliens and taken off.
Richard, just hold one second. Hold on one second. We have to say goodbye to our WBA audience. We're going to continue to top the hour, and we're going to take your calls, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. We'll continue while the people on BAI can listen to the news. We have to get some more issues in here, and I'm going to play a tape. Richard, I'd like for you to respond to this. And Jesse, if you have it, I sent it to you. This is a short 30-second tape. It's by a regular medical doctor who also teaches UCLA Medical Center. He's been there for a long time, right through the whole COVID mess, and he looked at the data and decided, and I'm not sure whether he had COVID or not, and therefore had natural immunity, but he decided not to get the vaccine. Here he's going to come out. He's being thrown out of the university. He went there to work. Nope. But listen to what the guy says. The guy throwing him out, when he goes to just speak to the guy says, stay away from me, stay away from me. Like he's going to be infected, and the guy's got a mask on, and he's at least 8 or 9 feet away. This is happening all over. And by the way, you want to know what power you have? You have the power to say no. And they're not counting upon anyone saying no. Well, guess what happened over the weekend? 1/3 of all Southwest airline pilots refused to get the vaccine. And also controllers down in Jacksonville, where all these mid-Atlantic where they direct all the planes from Florida up through the Carolinas and going out over the ocean, very heavy traffic area, they refuse to get the vaccine. And suddenly everything stops. You had over 1,000 canceled flights on Saturday, another high number on Sunday. And they tried to, they didn't mention vaccines at all. All of the PR came out, said, oh, you know, it was mechanical problems or weather problems or, no, it was people saying, I'm not going to get the vaccine, and therefore. And now look at the judge. There's a very well-known, highly respected judge, a liberal judge in New York City. He's been there a long time. He's a senior judge, and he didn't get the vaccine, and they wouldn't let him in the courthouse. Think of all the nurses. Think of the nurses and doctors that were there for about 18 months in the front line, and they were right there every day, sometimes working double shifts. We called them heroes then, and now we're throwing them out of the hospital, throwing them out of their jobs. Well, how many of them have natural immunity? They don't care. That's politics. That's not public health. So, Jesse, do you have that clip? And we just play it. Let's play this clip. I think people will find this of interest. This is one doctor. Listen to what he has to say.
They are escorting me out of the building. What's your title, sir?
Don't come near me.
What's your title?
Don't come near me.
Okay.
Keep walking.
And this is what happens when you stand up for freedom and when you show up to work, willing to work, despite being unvaccinated. And this is the price you have to pay sometimes. But what they don't realize is that I'm willing to go lose everything. Job, paycheck, freedom, even my life for this cause. Be well. United we stand. Divided we fall.
Just one doctor, orthodox, pro-vaccine. He's helped save a lot of lives, but today he was thrown out, and now he'll be attacked because he peacefully walked out. They didn't want him anymore. So how long is it going to take before people in other industries say no? That's the only power that you have to challenge the deep state, the plutocracy, the corruption, the ideologues, is to say no. Richard Gale, final thoughts.
Again, my only final thoughts is we need to be able to really deconstruct the narrative. And unfortunately, I think being able to deconstruct and break and crack the narrative, the official narrative right now, is only going to come from a grassroots effort, but also a grassroots effort that is really educated itself with being able to shove the science back into their faces and really show the hypocrisy and lack of science in their narrative.
You are right. All across the world, mainstream scientists and doctors are pushing back, joining together. And congratulations to them. They're the real heroes. Tonight, 7:00, I'm going to bring one of those heroes on so you can hear what she has to say. And she's pro-vaccine. All of the people we're inviting are pro-vaccine, pro-orthodox, pro-medicine. So nobody can say that, oh, we're just pushing an anti-vaccine agenda. I do not push an anti-vaccine agenda. I push a truth in science agenda. Freedom of choice agenda, common sense and reason agenda. And if that offends people, so be it. By the way, finally, thank you, Linda Perry. We were ahead of you, and that's why it takes time and full context to understand some of the things I'm saying. And today we gave time and full context so people understand what I'm saying without taking anything or leaving anything out of that context, which I did yesterday, which can cause some confusion. That's been corrected. Onward for tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.